right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Sales is King. We're in our brand new studio. I'm completely, totally excited here and looking forward to our guest today, who is Rocky Legrone and a gentleman that I've known for a long, long time and probably one of the top experts in terms of salesperson behavior and seller effectiveness, as he's been involved in this for so, so long. And I'm really excited for the conversation today, where we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on in terms of hiring. What are the best practices for hiring top reps? What are some of the pitfalls? And just generally speaking, you know, what's going on in the marketplace today? So Rocky, welcome. Glad to have
you.
And welcome to our first episode in our spanking new studio here with our expensive microphones and all this exciting equipment.
It is exciting. I love being first, Dan. Thank you for making me the first in the new studio.
I know that. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what you do and your background, because I think it's super interesting.
Well, thank you, Dan. First, let me say thank you for having me as a guest, and I hope to provide some great content for your listeners and your audience and help them come back to you for more experts, because you are the man as well, the king, I think, of sales is what you call yourself. So I love that. I actually got into sales development kind of by accident about 35 years ago. Went to one of those courses about how to win friends and influence people. Stuck around, went with those guys, worked with them for about 2 or 3 years, kind of cut my teeth, and then got into a franchise organization, did really well there. Left the franchise and needed to honor and respect my non-compete. So I had been doing a lot of work, obviously, with sales development, sales management, sales leadership, consulting, really helping salespeople get 10, 20, 30, 50% better. And as part of those engagements, you know, sales has turnover. Every position has turnover, but sales tends to be, as we'll get into in some of the recent facts in a minute, about 18 months is their tenure. And so as salespeople turn, companies that we were working with were looking to us to, you know, help them identify, attract, interview, onboard, and keep stronger salespeople. So we started offering that service probably back in 96, 97, and, you know, have continued to perfect the model and really help people make better selections and bring in salespeople that are going to raise the bar as part of our work. And I think what, you know, kind of gives us an advantage over what you might call recruiters is most recruiters don't focus in sales specifically. They do a lot of things in sales, which is part of that. And we come at it from a very different angle of really knowing and understanding the salesperson's mind, their heart, their grit. You know, what does it take to be successful in that role? Because it's very different selling pay-per-click advertising than $250,000 18-month sales cycle with 24 people involved and, you know, that enterprise sale. There's a lot of differences there. So each company is different in how they provide their leadership and what their place in the market is. So I think from our perspective of working with thousands and thousands of salespeople, we are able to see through the smoke and mirrors that most companies just don't recognize, right? Salespeople are really good at first impressions. They're good at, you know, telling people what they want to hear. And usually they're better at interviewing than the person that's doing the interviewing, right? So we do a lot of different things, but, you know, one of our real expertise is helping companies add sales staff that will raise the bar for the entire team.
Yeah, I love it. And so talk a little bit about, you know, how has sales hiring evolved over the years? Are you think more companies are doing a good job of it, or it still leaves a lot to be desired?
Man, I wish companies would do better, but then I wouldn't have much job security. I would tell you that the conversations I'm having today with prospects, clients, talent management, HR managers, sales managers, business owners, presidents, it's very, very similar to what we were doing back in 1996. So I don't think overall it has changed very much. Certainly the landscape has changed. We've been through ups and downs in the marketplace. You know, today, I think the last statistic I saw was there's 1.3 jobs for every one of the 6.8 million people that are unemployed today. So it's a candidate's market. And when you have a candidate's market, then, you know, it's really difficult to attract the candidates. When you have a employer's market and you have hundreds of candidates, the biggest problem is qualifying those candidates and which candidate's going to be the right one. But then when you don't have enough candidates, companies wear rose-colored glasses and they tend to make the wrong decisions. So it's a different set of problems, whatever market you're in. I think it's going to continue throughout this year that it's going to be a candidate's market and companies are going to struggle attracting enough of the right people. It's not hard to attract people in sales because, you know, like we say, they change every 18 months. So there's a constant set of salespeople in the market today. If you think 18 million people in sales in the US, 18 million people in business development, a little bit different role, different types of organizations. Well, that's the standard of number of people that are in the market at any given point because they change every 15 to 18 months.
Mm. Yeah. Super interesting. And so, you know, so what are some of the things that you guys work on in identifying top talent, right? I know you have more of a very, you know, detailed kind of assessment that you guys do. But what are some of the things that, you know, most hiring managers wouldn't think to try and ask about in hiring salespeople?
Well, you're kind of referring to the interviewing questions, but there's a lot that needs to happen before you actually get to that interview. You know, we find that most companies are writing ads based on the job description. I've never seen a job description that actually identified what are the daily activities, what are the tasks, what are the skills, what are the requirements to be successful in that role. It's more like, here's what we want you to do. Here's the duties. Here's, you know, kind of who you're going to be calling on. But it doesn't really identify the strengths and skills that are required to be effective in the position. Most of them don't have much personality to the ad. And so if you go on any job board, they all look the same. Unlimited opportunity, ground floor opportunity, unlimited commission, work for a great company. You know, they all look the same. So what we find is really key is writing the ad that's going to attract the right people. And then oftentimes it's not the job boards of where you want to place them. You know, you're competing with thousands and thousands of companies out there looking for those few candidates. So the ads have to look different. They have to sound different. They need to describe different things that really help identify that right candidate. And then once we attract them, you know, it's really helping with that candidate experience. Give you an example. We worked with a materials handling organization back in November and December. And most people would look at writing an ad for this organization about material handling, industrial supply, refurbishment, things that most of the younger generation, the new generation coming into sales, would not recognize as a real opportunity for them. And if you think about the motivation of, you know, the people that are in the market today in sales, which are millennials and Gen Z, right? Well, they're very tech savvy. They're very interested in the environment. So as the title of the ad, we put recycling, help your community, a whole bunch of other things like that. But it was more about attracting people who we know are in the market. And so we got a lot more response compared to what that company was getting with their standard ad. And through that, we were able to, you know, really qualify those salespeople if they had the skill sets that were necessary to ramp up fast. So part of it is, you know, before you get to the interview questions, it's really who do we want to attract? And if you kind of do some psychodynamics, if you will, and figure out who is that person we're looking for, and then where does that person live? Where do they go? Where do they spend time? How can we get our ad in front of them? And with a candidate's market, there's fewer people looking. And so they think it's harder, but it's not necessarily harder. It's just a different approach. And by taking those different approaches, we attract a different type of person. And that different type of person gives us a better quality pool, not necessarily a bigger quantity of pool. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And then so as you look across the millions of sellers that you've been involved in, are there any sort of qualities that are across the board, you know, must-haves that you've seen have driven, you know, the most success? And then conversely, are there any, you know, ones that are, you know, definitely stay away from? They're usually, you know, salesperson, not successful.
Indicators. That's a $64 million question, right? Dan, I would suggest that, you know, there's several issues when companies are looking to hire, and some of it is their own. And that is, you know, A players won't work for B managers, number one. Mm. So is their sales management, sales leadership up and skilled up enough to be able to manage a high performing salesperson? They're a different breed. And if you've never worked with one, it's difficult to understand and to read into what you need to be looking for. Another issue is the compensation. You know, they have a champagne taste and beer budgets, and they want people to come work for free. And you have a quagmire there where if you've got a salesperson in average $85,000 a year in the U.S., and you want them to come to work at $50,000 salary and make up the difference, but you have a 90 to 120 day sales cycle, well, that person is not able to live on $50,000 salary until they start making, even if they have the opportunity to make $150,000. They just can't make that gap. And so companies need to adjust comp plans to be able to attract more of the right people. And those comp plans don't have to always be about money. You know, as we just talked about, the millennials and Gen Zs, they're not necessarily money motivated. They're motivated more by a good place to work, a good environment. They're helping their community. They're doing things as part of a team. So more money doesn't necessarily make it right, but it has to be at least enough money to live on until you start making more money. The other thing you talk about and you ask the question is, what are the things that you want to look for? And what are the things you want to stay away from? Mm-hmm. And I would tell you that number one is grit. Does the salesperson have enough grit, that drive, that desire, that commitment to do what it takes to be successful, that willingness to get through a learning curve very quickly so they can have the right conversations, so they can have the resources at their fingertips that they need to be able to make the deal happen? And then does the company provide them with enough of that in the onboarding plan? Most onboarding plans are very weak, you know, and I'm sure you've seen that over your career. And then when you look at the things to stay away from, it's typically, and I'll give you a great example, working with a client that's rolling out a new product. We talked to them in April of last year. They had a pretty good candidate they thought that would be fantastic because this candidate was from their industry, had great success, had a fantastic, you know, LinkedIn list of people he worked with, was on several boards inside that industry, and was very well known. But guess what happened? He didn't leverage it. He was making so much money on salary that they were paying him not to sell. And when it came down to brass tacks, it's like, okay, we need you to send out 50 emails a day, 50 LinkedIn reach outs. We need you to make 10 phone calls a day. We need you to expand this territory. We need you to leverage these accounts. It came down to, well, I can't do that. You can't do that one day. And it's like, the people with great experience in the industry, the conversation we had was, you didn't hire a salesperson, you bought a list. But that list cost you 120 grand, and now you have the list. So now let's go get a salesperson, a real salesperson, not someone who's going to think making friends makes sales and glad handing and kissing babies. That's all great from an ambassador standpoint, but that doesn't put money on the right side of the P&L. So oftentimes companies are confused, and what they should be doing is looking at people who have sold in those markets to those people at those price points against that competition instead of, well, let's get somebody from the industry. So if you're selling to accountants, there are multiple industries that sell to accountants. If you look at the DNA of a salesperson that works with a office business machines company and compare that to someone who works for like Aramark, they both have a 90-day window of a sales cycle. They're both selling to typically the office manager or someone in the office, not the true decision maker. They both are asking for about $500 to $1,500 a month per location. And they both have very strong competition, and there's a lot of price pressure. So we could take someone from that copier business machine industry and put them right into the uniforms and rugs and the Aramark type of organization, and it's just a great fit. But they don't have the industry experience. So what we're looking for then is how quickly can they take new information in and use it? And we call that the figured out factor. So we know that people who have a lower figured out factor, we have to teach them step-by-step systems and processes and give lots of reinforcement. People that have a high figured out factor, we can teach them concepts. And then those concepts, they'll put them to use real quick. So that's another thing you need to know about candidates before you make the offer.
Yeah, I mean, the message is that there's really a lot that goes into hiring. It's very scientific. There are so many different components. And then many times people go with gut feeling or someone they know, or like you say, they might have a following, et cetera. Maybe you don't agree with me, but why do you think there's, I don't want to say so many bad sellers, but I just feel like I am exposed to a lot of, you know, amateur hour when it comes to people trying to sell things to me. Why is it, you know, when we see a great seller, it's like, oh, wow. You know, why aren't there more that are just better?
Well, I think there's a multifaceted answer for that. And I don't want to get too long-winded anymore, but I think when you look at the sales profession, it's really a career of default. I mean, very few people wake up an eighth grade career day and go, I want to be in sales. You know, it's a career default. People get into it by accident because they're good with people, because they communicate well. And then there's really bad training. You know, companies don't spend the money they need to spend to either train the salespeople or train the managers how to train the salespeople and onboard them correctly. When we look at our database with the tools that we use, we've got 2.5 million salespeople that have been evaluated with 180 unique findings for each one. And we can tell you that 6% are elite and fantastic. And that's the person you're referring to. Yeah. We can tell you that another 20, 24% are pretty, pretty good. And the rest really don't belong in sales. And that's what gives sales a bad name. That's what gives... Yeah. You know, that aha moment when you run into somebody that's really good and they're listening and they're asking great questions and, you know, they're helping build a internal business case and they're helping define the outcomes that they're going to experience without your products and services and the outcomes you'll have with them. And they can build trust quickly. So there's a lot of factors, I think, that give sales a bad name. And a lot of it has to do with most of the people in sales don't have the right sales DNA. They don't have the right grit and they don't have the skill sets. And it's not necessarily their fault. You know, they're good people. They just don't know where to go to get it, or their companies won't provide it for them.
Yeah. Super interesting. Let's talk a little bit about AI, right? All the rage. How do you see AI changing the sales game going forward and maybe even currently?
Well, I think it's already started. I think interviewers, companies, people that are hiring for sales need to be a lot more astute. I don't think it's going to change much on the resume side, right? I mean, I've never seen a resume that didn't say top performer or president's club. Or, you know, first in my class. Mm-hmm. But the question is, how did they get there? Okay, so you made President's Club. How many other people on your team made President's Club? Mm-hmm. How hard was it to make? Were those sales that you generated and you made, or were those leads that came to you that were, you know, bluebirds you didn't have to work that hard for? Was it family that you sold to get over the hump? What was the deal? So it's more about digging in to the information on the resume, and that's never going to change. As somebody told me the other day, it's like, well, the only way we're going to know if this is AI generated or not is if we see misspelled words, right? But you can certainly instruct AI to misspell a few words. So I think when you look at the paper and electronic documents, those are likely going to change. That's going to raise the bar. It'll all look and sound better and make it prettier. And it's going to make the interviewer a lot more astute in asking the right questions to get the salesperson to show their strengths and to show their weaknesses in the interview, which we call an audition. Because the only way you're going to know if they can actually sell and if they will sell is if you can force them to do that in front of you at the interview. And I don't mean sell me this pen, Dan, you know, or why are manhole covers round? I mean, let's ask questions that cause them to prove they know how to do what needs to be done.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I just love the whole concept of grit that you talk about, because, you know, when you think about it, we're coming out of, you know, unprecedented, you know, good economic times, right? So for many years, maybe even the, you know, the mediocre sellers were doing well. And now, over the last, you know, year or so, is kind of where the rubber meets the road, right? There's less dollars. It's a lot more difficult. So, you know, I love your assessment of, like, you know, how do you keep pushing forward? And how are you able to sell in a difficult market? That could be one of the questions that you guys potentially ask. But
You know,
I think
great insight, Dan. You're right. The you know, from, let's call it 2010 to 2019, early 2019, it was a seller's market. I mean, all you had to do was show up, right? Because people were spending money. And then, of course, when COVID hit, a lot of companies laid off, and there was a flood of great salespeople in the marketplace. And then you really didn't have to work that hard to sell because they were pumping so much money into the economy. But when that money got away and it's already spent and all the PPP money went away and everybody bought their boat and their RV and their third home from all that PPP payroll money, now what? Now supply chains are gone. Now you have to deal with problems with sales, and those service kind of salespeople are struggling. It's price-based. Recently, as you know, beginning of last year, we started hearing that there's mandates from the top. CFO says no more spending, get the lowest price, cut. And they cut to the extent of costing them money. We were working with a very large distributor last year during those times, and one of the buyers decided to change shipping companies. And during that, to save 3 pennies on a product, I mean, it's massive amounts of products, and that would equate to large, you know, savings. But 5 of their shipping containers got stuck in the port during their peak time, and they weren't able to sell any of the product from there. So they lost all of that business. And so what does a salesperson do? And how do you find out if they dealt with those situations, or what do they do? And so the question is, when you get the objection that we have to cut, how do you overcome that? How do you deal with that situation? Give me some examples of what you've done there.
Yeah.
And again, turning that into an audition. So I think part of it is understanding the world that the salesperson lives in, realizing that, you know, you're going to have 70, 80% failure, But how do you push through that failure? And how do you find a way to make something happen as opposed to, oh, well, they said to call them back next month. They said they were happy with their current supplier. They said that, you know, this was something that they had to put on the back burner. They had to talk to the company. All these excuses. That's what I want to bring out in the interview. Or I want to bring out what did they do differently than the rest of the sales world to make a difference.
Yeah. I mean, I see that, you know, quite a bit. It's, you know, and how do you take control of the situation, right? Because all we've been hearing about are buyers are stronger than ever before. They have more information, you know, but sellers have to take control. You know, they have to be able to lead the buyers, you know, and get them to the end of the road and not take no for an answer and understand, as you say, how to pivot and how to be prepared for some of these, you know, potential objections. So let me ask you one final question. If you're a person that's considering the sales profession today, whether you're young or, you know, not young, what would you say to them and what would be the best way to ensure potential success?
That's a wonderful question because I love working with salespeople who don't have bad habits. And therefore have to kind of undo those bad habits and recreate it. But I want to go back to something you really said that was really important a minute ago.
Yeah.
And that is consultative selling skills is what you were talking about. Mm-hmm. Those questions that rock the prospect's world, those questions that show the expertise that, yes, we might pay a few pennies more. We might be 5% higher, but we're worth it. And what makes us worth it? And that differentiating value and that ability to bring that out in the sales call is really what we want to find out on the interview as well, right? So all we have to do is say, what are the 3 to 5 very difficult questions you ask on every sales call? Give me some examples. Why do you do that? What happened before you start asking those questions? Give me some examples. You know, so it's really about, you know, taking the sales process and breaking that down and asking questions about the sales process. And they may or may not have a sales process that's, you know, working or not working, but I need to know that because if I do decide to hire that person, I need to be able to know where to help them with to ramp them up, not only with the company products, services, tools, resources, but their selling skills. And sales managers often aren't really well-versed in coaching that causes that growth. So again, it's a complex situation. It's not just identifying the right person. It's not just identifying the right skill set. It's about providing the right environment, the right tools for people to be successful inside that organization. So back to your question.
Agreed.
What would I tell a brand new salesperson? Have fun.
Yeah.
Fail often. Learn from your failure. Find a mentor or a coach who is 10 times better than you. And as soon as you can equal them, go find another one. And as soon as you can equal them, go find another one. And never stop learning. But don't be afraid to fail. The faster you fail, the faster you reach success. And this younger generation, Dan, you and I are pretty close. I mean, I used to have hair like you, but, you know, that was 30 years ago. You kept yours, I didn't. But if you look at the millennials and the Gen X's, it's very difficult for them to accept failure. Because even myself included, we didn't allow them to fail as much as they should have. And so working them through that failure and letting them know that that's part of it and having the right coaching, you know, and a sales manager's job as a coach is to help people perform at a higher level than they can by themselves. Sometimes you got to be the 800-pound gorilla. Sometimes you got to be, you know, therapist. Sometimes you got to be best friend. Sometimes you got to be, you know, mom and just listen. So dealing with the new people that are coming into sales, they're a lot smarter. They're a lot more technologically capable. They have more issues in building trust and relationships because they're used to talking with their thumbs. It's not a bad thing because eventually they will be selling to those same people and those peers. But today they're selling to baby boomers. They're selling to the lower end of them. And they struggle having the right conversation and having the ability to build trust quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great place to leave this off, and I'd love to have you back. Yeah. So many great things you said, but it's like, don't be afraid to fail. I love it. You know, let's face it. You're going to have a bunch of doors slammed in your face until you get to the one where they're going to sign a contract. Right. And then you start all over again. And then it's the, you know, what have you done for me lately? Don't get too high with the highs and too low with the lows. Right. Yeah. Because yeah. It's a damn roller coaster ride. And then the last one on, you know, coaching and, you know, perhaps there's, you might have to go outside your organization to a mentor, right? Because sometimes the managers don't give you the right type of coaching. And then, you know, I had a post earlier this week on, you know, personal development. Like, you have to be in charge of your own personal development, and you have a budget, and go out and help yourself get better and learn about what's going on out there. So, I just really enjoyed this, Rocky. I've always loved talking to you, and you bring a wealth of information. How do folks find you, and what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Thanks for asking, Dan. It's my pleasure to be here. As you and I, you said, we've worked together many years on different projects and paths I've crossed many times. Thank you. Easiest way, look up Rocky the Grown. There's only one of me. Google Rocky the Grown, or go to salesdevelopmentexpert.com. Hit me up on LinkedIn, and man, we'd love to chat with you. If we can help you, we will, and we'll do everything we possibly can. If we can't, we'll make some other recommendations for you to do something different.
Yeah, and I can definitely vouch for Rocky and his group. I've worked with him on a number of different occasions, and he's phenomenal, and I would encourage you to reach out just to get to know him and see what he can do to help. Rocky, Happy New Year. Let's get you back in another few months, see what the heck's going on in the seller's world. And thanks for coming on today.
Thank you, Dan. Just one more little plug. I just put together a white paper for sales hiring trends for 2024. If you want to copy that, shoot me an email. We'd be happy to send that out to you. We got about 10 points of what to expect in sales hiring for 2024. And then maybe we'll come back in the future, Dan, we can kind of double check those predictions and see if my crystal ball was clear or if it was cloudy.
For sure. Yeah, that's I'm holding that white paper now. It's a good one. You should check it out. All right, folks. Good to see you. And we'll talk soon. You too. Thank you.